Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories in the outdoors. We often go into the wilderness to prove something, to prove we can hike further, climb higher, to prove something to ourselves or to others. When Jen Kinney decided to go on her first solo backpacking trip, she wanted to prove she was capable and strong, all by herself, alone. Until a mishap on the trail made her wonder, when is it okay to need help? I'll let her take it from here.
The last thing I purchased in 2016 was a pair of scissors. I saw them by the register of a little antique store on my way to the Appalachian Trail. They're small but deceptively heavy. The handles are decorated with little fleur-de-lis. The blades glide easily apart and together, and then at the last moment they snap closed with a crisp, satisfying friction. Snip. The scissors are meant for knitting, but I don't knit. I didn't know what I bought them for. They just felt like the perfect tool for an impulsive New Year's gift to myself, a way to cut ties with the year that would end tonight. I was definitely glad to be over with it. Earlier that year, I had moved to Philadelphia with my boyfriend of 4 years. He bought a row home, I picked out paint colors, penny red and cobalt blue. I took a video of us one day, while we were painting the dining room macaroni orange. It was a hot August morning, Frank Ocean on the boombox, rolling this outlandish paint up the wall, side by side. This is how it's gonna be, I thought. But those gliding moments inevitably ended in a biting tension. We could never shake it. A few months after our move, the day after the presidential election, we broke up. I moved out of his house. Now, it was the last day of the year, and I had stopped by a little antique store on my way to the mountains. This was the first New Year's I'd be single in years, and I wanted to face that head on. It was cold, ice was still blanketing the ridgelines, but I decided to take myself camping anyway, for New Year's Eve, alone. I picked a spot above the Delaware Water Gap on the Pennsylvania leg of the Appalachian Trail. The sky was a dull gray when I arrived. I climbed a short, steep trail up to the ridge and I looked down at the farmlands below. It wasn't far, I wasn't off in the wilderness, but I felt expansive out here by myself, capable. And then I got back to my car and realized I'd forgotten a tent. Not a great start to my independent life. There was a lodge at the campground for through hikers on the AT, so I figured I would just hang out there most of the night and then sleep in my car. There was no one in the lodge but the staff. All the cabins at the campsite were full, their lights blazing. I could see the silhouettes of the families inside. The staff were bustling around in the kitchen making food for a New Year's party down the mountain at the volunteer fire department. I think they pitied me, curled up on the leather couch by the fire, reading a book, all by myself, on New Year's Eve. But I was so content. One staffer kept tiptoeing over gently to offer me a cookie or a drink, some extra quinoa and cranberry salad. When midnight struck, the sky to the west blazed red, and for a moment, I thought it was a bomb and not fireworks. It had just been that kind of year. I went to sleep in the car by myself, and I thought, this was a good start, but I could do better. I could have remembered my tent, and I could go farther, more remote. I think of myself as an independent person. In fact, if you asked my ex, he might say it was actually a problem in our relationship. He would try to help me out with some simple task, and I would tell him, no, I can do that myself. I could tell that it hurt him, but I was scared of being swallowed up in him and his plans. I was scared of not being capable. I didn't want to need him too much. I knew I already relied on him for a lot, more than I was comfortable with. His love told me I was worthy of being loved. His approval validated that I was good, I was on the right path. Now I had to know that for myself. I had to meet my own needs, I thought. So I made a plan that night on the Appalachian Trail that I would return here in the summer and go on my first solo backpacking trip. Nothing too crazy, 3 days I figured, 50 miles, but it would be new for me, a test of my ability to care for myself. I would show myself, I would show everyone, yeah, maybe I would show my ex, what I could do on my own. Then, just as I started to plan a trip for that summer, I got a curious offer. 2 years earlier, I'd met a man in a hostel in the Republic of Georgia. Though we were both in relationships, we stayed up talking all night. I'd always wondered where it might have gone. Then out of the blue, he sent me a message. He'd be in the States soon for his brother's wedding. Did I want to come to North Carolina for the reception? I hemmed and hawed. On the one hand, yes, 1,000 times yes. I was already lonely and hungry for affection. On the other hand, the idea of driving hundreds of miles to see a handsome stranger left me feeling exposed. It seemed needy. It did not seem like something a highly independent woman who knows her own worth would do. And besides, something in me couldn't take the offer seriously. Why would he want me there? Wouldn't I just be in the way? Finally, he reassured me. I wouldn't have invited you if I didn't want you to come. So I made a little deal with myself. I'd go to the wedding, and then 2 days later, I would start hiking the Mountain to Sea Trail in the hills of western North Carolina. I would trek 3 days, 52 miles through the Linville Gorge, alone, by myself, just me. I packed my bag and borrowed a dress. The refineries of Philadelphia gave way to farmland, and then a long valley the length of Virginia. The highways gave way to byways, and then to country roads. And after 9 hours of replaying every doubt in my mind about how desperate I would look, how eager, how needy, I was easing my way into the foothills. I was pulling up in front of an old apple barn, and there was my date, barefoot and waving. It turned out that he'd grown up in a small town, where it was clear that he and his brother's now wife were deeply loved. The bride and groom's families were so intertwined that the question, "Are you on the bride's side or the groom's side?" was delightfully irrelevant. The band, the photographer, the caterer were all friends of the family. I felt like an old friend of the family after just a few hours. All around me was such tenderness. I don't know if it's possible to be a wedding date and not think about one's own future marriage, but I was glad my date was bitten by the same bug. "This is incredibly beautiful," I said to him, watching guests push back tables to dance. "Wait until you see my wedding," he replied, and then he turned to me, embarrassed. "I'm not sure why I said that," he apologized. Both of us were giddy with this weird, unearned intimacy between us. It was only our second time meeting. He kept saying, "I'm so glad you're here," and I kept saying earnest, old-timey things like, "I'm touched you invited me. Truly, I'm so moved." It felt sweet and ingenuous at the same time. Guests at the wedding had heard little snippets about me, and some thought I was a thru-hiker on the Appalachian Trail. I found myself wishing that I was that type of woman, who carries a plain cotton dress in her pack while she traverses a mountain range, who casually walks into town for a wedding, and then carries on her way, as self-contained as a snail in its shell. Then I wouldn't be the kind of woman that I was, one who was hungry enough for affection that she'd driven hundreds of miles for a weekend with a man she'd met only once. The wedding ended, and so did the weekend. We said goodbye, with vague promises to meet again. Friends of friends were letting me stay with them in Asheville before I started hiking the next day. Someone I met at the wedding had offered to shuttle my car to the end of the trail and then drop me off at the trailhead, which felt excessively generous because it would take hours, and he wasn't particularly close with my wedding date. He just had a kind heart and the day off. We played each other our favorite music and chatted on the 2-hour drive along the Blue Ridge Parkway. I was feeling smug and content. I had checked and triple-checked the contents of my pack. Base layer, rain layer, thermals, sleeping bag, hammock. I had a water filter and water tablets, and my stove, a neat little mechanism that can fit in my pocket and unfolds like a butterfly. A perfect tool. I kept going over the list in my head. And then, faster than I was prepared for, we were there, in the campground where I'd planned to start hiking from. And I was getting out of the car, shouldering my pack, thanking my new friend and driver, and... oh, God. No way. I'd forgotten my hiking boots. I had planned to give my feet a break, to wear flip-flops until I got to the trailhead, but I had left the boots in my car, an hour and a half back up the road. I was horrified. We started searching for sporting goods stores nearby. Starting a 50-mile hike in new boots sounded terrible, but not as bad as making this poor man I had just met repeat that whole trek with me. But there was nowhere to go, and he was an angel. We retraced our steps up the parkway. I bought him dinner, and in just 3 short hours, he dropped me off at the trailhead again. He was still generous and easygoing. I was still apologizing profusely when he drove off. At last, I was alone. After 3 days in constant company, this solitude suddenly felt like a penance. In fact, it felt oddly like my New Year's Eve. Quiet. Anticlimactic. Something new was beginning, but with my new friend gone, there was no one to watch me begin it. No one to celebrate this with me. Wasn't that the point? I started walking. After all that back and forth, it was late in the day, but it was almost summer solstice, so the light hadn't faded entirely. I climbed a gentle slope until the trail leveled out and began to encircle a mountaintop. The sun dipped lower and lower until it was scalding the forest red. I was positively giddy. I kept chasing the sun around the next corner, thinking any minute now I'd burst out into a clearing and see the peaks to my east, but I never did. I just kept going and going while the light faded. It was nearly pitch black when I realized I had overshot my last chance to fill up water. This was a crucial stop. After this, there would be a 12-mile stretch, climbing to and descending from ridgelines, with no water at all. Okay, I told myself. All right. This is what you asked for. You're responsible for yourself. Every need I had, for rest and water and food, I'd have to meet it myself. It was too dark by now to go back and find the creek. I kicked myself. I had noticed the creek, but it seemed too dinky. But I had a half liter of water. I could make it through the night. I found a little clearing, close enough to the Blue Ridge Parkway, that I could hear the occasional comforting whir of a car in the night, and I set up camp. I hoisted my food bag into a tree so animals couldn't get into it at night. It was my first time tying a bear hang by myself. I set up my hammock and settled in, repeating my plan to myself over and over. I'll wake up in the morning, walk back to the creek, and fill all my water bottles. I'll wake up in the morning, walk back to the creek. I heard a crash. Another. I was convinced that every little rustle in the forest was the sound of my bear hang unraveling, my bag of food rolling down the steep hillside and disappearing. Surely my messy knots would not hold. Or else I had tied it too low and a bear would swipe it from the tree. Or maybe that was the sound of a bear in my campsite. Had I left sunscreen in my pack right under my hammock? I'd heard bears could mistake the smell for food. I slept fitfully and woke late. I forced myself to follow through on my plan, backtracking for water, and then hiking onward. From then on, I was meticulous about filling up. I checked my trail guide obsessively, noting every landmark. I walked further and further from the parkway, deeper and deeper into the Pisgah National Forest, through rhododendron, toward Linville Gorge. I never encountered anyone else on the trail. I ate crumbling bread left over from the wedding, mixed with peanut butter, and I cautiously rationed my water. I stopped to read a book about slowness. I relished my own company. I wasn't lonely, but I was embarrassed by how much I kept thinking of the wedding, about my date, how his lips had felt, whether we'd moved too quickly, whether we'd see each other again. Keep your own company, I reminded myself. Enjoy this, your solitude. But already I was crafting the stories in my head I would tell friends on my return. After 16 miles, I crossed a highway, the last road before I would dip into the gorge and 10 unbroken miles of forest. The sun was setting, but I kept pushing, pushing, not looking forward to the quiet of my campsite. But finally, I could go no further. It was getting dark. That dinner felt lonely. I was almost too tired to cook it. I fell into another uneasy slumber, convinced each time I started to drift off that something or someone was ambling up the trail towards me. I kept checking to make sure. I woke unhappily. The sky was gray. Every part of me hurt. If it was up to me, I would just keep sleeping. And it was up to me. There was no one else to consult. For the first time, that scared me. But I hauled myself up and I started walking. My pack felt twice as heavy as the day before. I had 2 miles to the nearest source of water where I planned to eat breakfast. It turned out to be a roaring river. I set up on the bank, screwed my little butterfly stove to my propane tank, cooked oatmeal, and then refilled my mug with turmeric tea. All I needed now was to refill my water bottles, and I was ready to go on. I looked down at my stove, that neat little contraption, lightweight and portable. I'd pack it up in a minute. I filled my 3 water bottles, one at a time, and I walked back up the bank, and I tripped. I kicked the stove, and faster than I thought possible, the elegant little mechanism crumbled. The tiny screws all loosened themselves, the 3 arms no longer slid easily together and apart. I was left with a small metal heap of plates and rings I couldn't fit back together. The perfect tool, rendered useless. 25 miles of trail left and no stove. No stove, no way to boil water to cook my oatmeal or my dehydrated burrito bowls. I'll make fires, I told myself, not wanting to think the problem through too deeply at this point. I'll just cook over the fire, I thought, though I could already see the storm clouds moving in. Would I even be able to start a fire if all the wood was wet? I walked on, but with every step, my spirits were sagging. How far was I from the road now? What were the odds I'd encounter other people on the trail who might be able to help me out? Just then, the forest ended abruptly where a fire had raged down the mountain. What had been lush and protected was now bare and gray, a lichen-covered scramble of rock and fallen tree. And rain. No doubt about it now, it was raining, harder by the minute. I was prepared for that. I pulled on my rain gear, covered my pack, but the fear kept growing. I was only halfway back to my car. My plan included 2 more nights on the trail. How would I cook? Could I live off cheese and trail mix for the next 25 miles? Look, I knew it wasn't the most dangerous situation I could find myself in. I knew people climbed mountains with just a power bar all the time. But I didn't know how to trust my own judgment. What did I know? And yet I was by myself. I needed to be able to know. I strung up my rain fly between 2 trees and sat down to think. I took inventory. What did I truly need to get through the next 2 days? I had plenty of nuts, cheese, I even had an emergency packet of ramen that I could eat raw. I had done it before. I tried to be rational about it all, but my brain had turned to mush. I had never been this far from another person. And the truth was, I didn't really want to be out here alone anymore. I switched on my phone, and to my surprise, I had service. So I did the only thing left I could think to do. I phoned a friend. For the past few years, this had been the hardest thing to do, ask for help. Sure, my work life might have been floundering. Yes, my relationship may have been in real trouble, but I always wanted to soldier on, shoulder the whole burden. No thanks, I can do it myself. And where had it landed me? My relationship was over now, I was lonely in work as well as in love, and now I was out here under my rain fly picking a tick off my leg. And I really had to be honest with myself. I couldn't make this decision on my own. Thankfully, my friend Bailey picked up my call. I was almost too embarrassed to ask. "I'm out here backpacking without a stove," I told her. "It's starting to rain and I don't know if I should continue or go back to the last road I passed and try to hitch a ride to my car. What would you do?" And Bailey, ever thoughtful, a skilled backpacker, told me she'd turn back. I was only 5 miles past the last road. "Sure, you could probably make it with what you have," she told me after I gave her an inventory. "But that's assuming everything goes perfectly. If one more thing goes wrong, you could be in real trouble." I was embarrassed by the completeness of my relief. Bailey's advice was exactly what I wanted to hear. "You've done enough. You can go home." I'd wanted to prove that I was capable of taking care of myself, and I felt like I'd failed. But there was Bailey in my ear, telling me that right now, in this moment, this is what care looked like. Asking for help, turning around, backing down. "This is part of learning to be in the outdoors," she was saying, "knowing how to keep yourself safe." I was not looking forward to letting anyone know that I hadn't completed my hike. I didn't want to tell my wedding date, or the friends of friends I had stayed with in Asheville, or my kind new friend who had driven me to the trailhead twice. I could see now that I had gotten on the trail because all of them had helped me do it. But I did want to turn back. The mixture of gratitude and shame that I felt was giving me a stomach ache. I walked back down the burnt-out mountain, back into the forest, past the river where I'd kicked my stove, past my campsite from the night before, down a stretch of trail that had become a river in the rain. It was pouring by the time I made it out to the highway and stuck out my thumb. Unsurprisingly, drivers weren't quick to pick up a drenched hiker, but I eventually got a ride and then another. It would take an hour to get to my car, at least. A little red sports car pulled over. It was completely jammed with football padding and driven by a big, doe-eyed young man. He had just graduated high school a few weeks earlier and was headed down to South Carolina, exactly the opposite direction from my car. But he didn't mind, he told me. And he drove me the whole winding way back. Bless you, I thought. Bless you. The whole drive back to Philadelphia, I called up friends and told them about the wedding, about my walk, the good and the bad. When I was stuck on the trail, I had called other friends besides Bailey and gotten their voicemails. Later, when I talked to one of those friends, she told me that if she'd been in my shoes, she would have walked on. I wondered what choice I would have made if I'd gotten her advice first. Just hearing it, I felt ashamed all over again, that I hadn't stuck to my stubborn instincts and just kept hiking. But driving home, I had to admit that walking 50 miles wasn't really what mattered to me. The point wasn't really to get through the Linville Gorge. I had wanted to prove that I could take care of myself, that I could meet my own needs. And I had, because Bailey had helped me. Walking on wouldn't have proved anything, except maybe that I didn't know how to be gentle with myself, that I was willing to let pride take priority over safety. I'd needed a friend to tell me that. And not just on the trail. I was single again and grappling with the awareness that no partner could meet all of my needs. But then I'd swung too far in the other direction. I thought I could meet them all by myself. Of course I can't. I need friends and mentors and teachers and, hey, lovers. I still keep in touch with my wedding date, but we still live far apart. We even talk about our love lives. It's kind of beautiful, actually. That hike was almost a year ago now. I just went on my second solo backpacking trip. But this time, I didn't have anything to prove. And next time, I'll want company. I think I actually enjoy hiking more that way. I didn't spend New Year's Eve alone this year either. And though I still use those heavy little scissors I bought to kick off 2017, I gave myself a very different gift to mark the start of 2018. I took myself to the mall for a red little number of lacy lingerie. Thank you.
was Jen Kinney. She's a writer, reporter, and radio producer based in Philadelphia. She describes herself as a clumsy but enthusiastic outdoors person who likes to learn about edible plants, explore new trails, and swim anytime she can. A big thank you to Thomas Copps and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to Out There. We are an independent production, and we rely on listener support to keep bringing you quality stories. If Out There has brightened your day in some small way, we hope you'll consider making a gift of your own. Just head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, and click support. You can make a one-time contribution, or even better, you can contribute to our Patreon campaign, which lets you make smaller gifts on a monthly basis. Either way, thank you so much for your support. It means a lot. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Eggerking, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.